Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to Third Stream View. This is your not-so-humble host, PK, coming to you on Monday evening, November 21st. Again, I'd like to thank the suits in the office there at bbsradio.com for helping me to promote free speech and their unwavering stance for free speech and getting the word out through alternative radio. Thank goodness, because this station is not controlled by statist corporate interest and the CIA and the Zionist crowd all united together to control the airwaves of the status quo. And on this show, I talk about history, economics, world events, politics, geopolitics, health, and a lot of things, a lot of interesting topics. Mostly, I'm into the political, geopolitical, and economics thing, and of course, history. And I make no secret of the fact that I slam hard on Israel and Zionism. So hello to the Mossad out there, FBI, CIA, MI6, all the people who would like to screw us and keep us as the sheeple. But some of us continue to resist and stand up to their whole power structure, the globalist, Rockefeller, Rothschild, Illuminati crowd. And if you'd like to call in the show, the toll-free number is 888-429-5471. Again, that's 888-429-5471. I had a little scheduling issue with one of my guests who was supposed to be on here tonight, and so that didn't work out, and it's not easy to get guests at a last-minute situation, and so I don't try to bust my butt to do it because I want it to be genuine and not rushed and contrived and put anybody on the spot. So I just chose to go without that guest tonight. Hopefully I'll reschedule them and wing it, as I say. I'm going to talk about Ron Paul a little bit. As you probably know, he only got 89 seconds last week in the foreign policy debate. And it's so just blatantly obvious how they marginalize him, the way they treat him and they ignore him. And he's got the strongest foreign policy statements yet about the tragic wars, the awful U.S. federal government's foreign policy. So it's interesting to see what they do. Now, there's another Republican debate tomorrow night. So we'll see how they treat him tomorrow night. It's the same thing, and they take down the numbers from the polls and whatnot. They try to steer people away. They don't bring him up. They try to steer people away from him and try to make it look like it's only a choice between what Romney and Perry or now Newt, with his horrible track record of promoting more war, expanding the wars. He was for he believes in this climate change BS. A huge ethanol supporter. Talk about a boondoggle, wasteful, ecological, tragic mess, subsidized corporate welfare. And of course, he is, I believe, a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. Well, if that isn't a pro-Zionist think tank, I don't know what is. So not only do I believe in a separation of church and state, what I really believe in is a separation of synagogue and state. Most people have no idea what an undercurrent there is of Zionist power in this country and the grip that Israel has on America's throat, if you will. And I don't know if anybody who speaks much like this on air, I'm sure there probably is. I'm rather blunt and to the point about it. And I refuse to ever conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, although that's what the Zionist crowd would like to give off, that the two are the same when they're specifically not. And I stand with the anti-Zionist Jewish writers. Of course, all anti-Zionists, but especially Jewish anti-Zionists like Norman Finkelstein and especially Gilad Atzmon, who is an Israeli, who is now a British citizen, and quite the jazz saxophone player. He's got a new book out called The Wandering Who. Instead of The Wandering Jew or Jews, it's The Wandering Who, where he really comes to grip with Jewish identity, Jewish supremacism, and the whole paranoia, the whole trip. So I'm reading it and really enjoying it. And again, these sort of books and the things I'm into were critical of Zionism and Israel and Israel's treatment of the Palestinians, of course. But to ever accuse us of being haters or advocating hatred of violence is totally wrong. And that's something that the Zionists like to do because they're trying to stop the gaps, because thankfully Israel's back is against the wall now, because the world has been waking up and seeing how they treat their neighbors, seeing how what they've done to the Palestinians over the years. You know, no wonder the Palestinians are pissed off. And like I like to say, the Palestinians would be just as upset if they were kicked off their land by Chinese, Peruvians, or Martians. So that whole Middle East crock, again, moving on from this, but my solution for the Middle East is, of course, as I've said before, is to find immediate common ground, especially with Jews united against Zionism, the Israeli peace movement, and Israeli civil rights groups. And Ron Paul walks a fine line on this, because he wants Israel to have more autonomy to do manage their own affairs and doesn't want them to be dependent on us. So, of course, he's called anti-Semitic for that, because he wants to cut off all foreign aid, as I certainly do, to all foreign countries. And if people want to help other people in other countries, they can just write a check. Again, if anybody wants to call in here at Third Stream View, the number is 888-429-5471. Ron Paul was on Face the Nation yesterday, CBS, and Bob Schieffer tried to knock him off his horse, but he just wouldn't. Ron Paul stood his ground and told it like it is. Although I wish I could be his coach, because there's some key phrases I'd like Ron Paul to be able to use and to rely on and never water down his message. But Ron Paul was supposed to get 20 minutes. He was promised or told he would get 20 minutes, and Schieffer only gave him 10. So that just shows you that the media despises him. And if the media despises him and the other candidates don't like him, and the Democrats, any of which don't like him, especially the nomenclature, those at the top, if they don't like him, then he must be doing something right. It's like I used to say about chiropractic. If the doctors don't like chiropractic, they must be doing something right. But that's fortunately changed a bit. In fact, I need to go to my chiropractor this week. I go regularly just to be tuned up, and I really swear by chiropractic. And I've had acupuncture, and I have a brilliant naturopath. So I'm really hooked up with my chiropractor and my naturopath. And of course, mixed with diet, exercise, and nutrition, and supplements. And I always go to them first if I have any health issues, and they will guide me elsewhere long before a MDs will ever send you to chiropractic or acupuncture or naturopathy, you know, alternative medicine. Well, it looks like I have a call there. Is Andy on line three, is it? Andy, are you out there?
DC, can you hear me all right?
You wouldn't be Andy Devine, would you?
No, I don't have a song rhymed either.
And no, not Andy Williams or Andy Griffith?
No. And I don't ride a horse, and I ain't from the West.
So, what brings
you
to Third...
Can you hear me all right?
Yes. What brings you to Third Stream View in the mighty PK here? What's on your mind?
Oh, I would just, you know, a little bit of everything, a little bit about what's going on in the country right now. I heard you talking about Ron Paul and his 90 or his 89 seconds of time.
89 seconds.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Did you catch him on Face the Nation yesterday?
Yes, there's no bias in that, is there?
No, I mean, especially since Mr. Schlieffer offered him 20 minutes guaranteed and only gave him 10 before he got him off the air.
Yeah, I just mentioned that. Yeah, and Ron Paul stood his ground. I wish that I could coach Ron Paul. I called in 2007. I called the campaign and offered to fly out on my own dime and spend a little time with him here and then try to coach him, but never water down his message. But there's a few key phrases and things that he could say to really stand his ground even more. I wish that he would do, especially to comment on his own record. Well, look at my speech. I urge you to look at my 2002 speech. Da 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 da. You know, not to pat himself on the back so much, but to prove he's correct because he knows Austrian economics, as do I. And if you've listened to this show, you've heard me talk about it before, Austrian economics. Actually, the Austrian school of economics. I always say the Austrian school because rank-and-file Americans, they would think, oh, the country of Austria. Well, first of all, they probably think that's where kangaroos come from, but they would think...
and wallabies.
Thank you. You know, that's where they... That's the origin of this school, but mainly it's in the States now. It has been since about, you know, 1940 when Mises came over. So, are you familiar? You've heard Ron Paul talk about Austrian economics.
I've heard him talk many times about it, sure. And I'm hip to Austrian economics myself. So,
well, that's good. Everybody should be. I wish I was taught it in school or high school because I didn't, you know... I'm an idiot in math anyway, but when I took economics in high school and college, I didn't learn anything. It was charts and graphs and I guess Keynesian crap. Yeah, and I didn't get anything out of it. Then I started reading some Milton Friedman, and then I moved on to the Mises and the Austrian school. It's like, oh, hello. You know, the new horizon was right there. So what do you think about the economy? Where do you see the economy headed?
Oh, well, I don't see anything good coming. I mean, I've been just reading up on some of my information that I get regularly, and I don't know if you're hip to John Williams of Shadow Stats. He has his own website, shadowstats.com. I follow him pretty closely.
I don't know John Williams. Isn't there a John Williams who was a famous composer or orchestrator or conductor?
There was Vaughn Williams.
I think of John. I thought it was John Williams who was a... Big
John
in the
Williams,
movie.
I think he's a piano player, wasn't he?
I thought there was a John Williams who was a producer in the movie industry.
Oh, John Williams wrote all the stuff for like Star Wars and for Raiders of the Lost.
So he's a financial advisor too?
Yeah, he wrote all of that. What's that?
What, he's a financial advisor too?
Well, John Williams is an economist, actually.
Right, I know. It's another John Williams. My joke failed, apparently.
Yeah. I'm trying to catch you, but I think there's a delay in the sound here, so I'm getting confused.
Oh, okay. Well, So tell us about John Williams.
Well,
his
according
take
to John
on the economy.
Williams, basically, shadow stats is like the shadow numbers. You know, the government comes out with their reports. They say, well, the CPI is this, the PPI is that, and our gross domestic product is that. And he goes and he looks through the numbers, and then he comes out and says, well, this is what's really happening, and this is how they can get away with saying what they're saying. And just recently they came out, you know, the government's... budget ended on September 30th, and they say that the deficit was $1.29 trillion in the last year. Okay? Now, they're talking about a deficit reduction over the next 10 years of $1.2 trillion. Well, that was just shot. So that's gone. And that's only a reduction on future spending. That's not on the spending that's going on right now. You understand that, right?
Yeah. Okay. Reagan did the same thing. This future cuts.
Yeah.
Cuts in the future growth.
Exactly. Which could be changed as soon as the election is finished in 2012.
I hate the way Obama, and Ron Paul doesn't do this, but Obama and I think maybe even some of the Republicans, they talk about, well, by 2020 or 2022, this will be gone, this and that. Like, yeah, right. What's going to happen in the meantime? It's always way in the future instead of fixing the problem now.
Yeah, that's all wishful thinking, though.
It's
listen,
BS
okay, here's,
thinking.
Here's what he has to say about the actual... Okay, here's what he says in his latest report. The actual annual deficit on a generally accepted accounting principle, which is GAAP accounting, which is what, you know, the accounting industry uses as generally accepted. You know, that's all it means. Basis. Likely will be reported in the range of $5 to $7 trillion for 2011. With the GAAP shortfalls in 2012 and beyond likely to show ongoing deterioration, irrespective of the super committee's actions, which found out have been nothing.
You mean the deficit for this year is going to be more like $7 trillion?
Between 5 and 7. I think his actual number comes out to 5.3, closer to 7, though, because there's so much jiggering of the numbers.
Yeah, but doesn't he say we owe it to ourselves, so it's no big deal?
Oh, well, yeah, well, everybody knows that.
FDR, thank you.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and it's basically how he explains it is this is what's called a simple cash-based system that has been gimmicked anew, which is something they've been doing since the Johnson era. So what they basically say is when the Treasury starts to count some of its recent bailout outlays as investments. So the bailouts don't go into the deficit. It's an investment now.
It's amazing that they get away with that crap, and they try to throw regular people in jail for minute infractions of laws that shouldn't exist anyway. They're the biggest criminals. Washington, D.C., federal government.
New York for trying, for 20
bucks. Federal government is the biggest criminal ever.
Well, it's the federal mafia, right?
The federal mafia, that is the FBI, CIA, DEA, you know, all those alphabet soup organizations, they
H-U-D.
Cooperate. They are in league with the global mafia, IMF, World Bank, World Trade Organization, NAFTA, CRAFTA. They're in league with them. So in a sense, between nations, there's anarchy.
That's for sure.
You know?
But you know all of those alphabet soup agencies, you know what they are. They're a bunch of acronyms, of course, right?
Yeah.
And you know what that leads to?
Tell me.
That leads to a nation of acronymbeciles. Hello.
Thank you very much. I'll do the
Frank
jokes.
Zappa, just so you know.
Thank you.
Okay.
So
it's not my joke.
It's amazing to hear Obama just keep going down the wrong path. So it does bring to mind, and even though Gary, if you know who Gary North is, he disagrees.
Yeah, I know him very well.
Yeah, he says this isn't true, but I say, Gary, I think you're completely wrong, is that I think it was Meyer Nathan Rothschild, one of them said, you know, the thing about show me who makes the rules of any country. No, show me who controls the money or the banks of any country, and I care not who makes its rules. So
exactly.
The Fed continues to go down its awful path and maintain its power. Meanwhile, Obama's trashing the economy, and that doesn't matter as long as the banks have the power and control. The rest of the economy be damned.
Controls the money, controls everything.
Yeah, yeah. And it's paper money backed by nothing. I'm not against paper money as long as it's backed by something. You know, and people take that out of context.
It's something of real lasting value.
But you can't carry, you're not going to carry a lot of gold and silver around with you to buy a car when you can, you know, if you had a responsible system of, you know, currency backed, you know, paper money backed by sound currency without, you know, fractional reserve and all that crap, you could still write a check, but that check wouldn't be backed by FDIC and all that other crap. It would be real. So I'm not against paper money. That distinction should be made also, you know, paper money or writing a check backed by something. You know, that's
right.
The crux of the issue, you know.
Well, that creates a convenience for the people doing business with each other.
Right, because barter is very difficult.
Time,
in a highly developed society, barter is quite difficult. I mean, it might revert back to that if the economy gets worse, which I think is going to get worse next year. And Obama, what does he have to run on? He's just going to attack the Republicans and attack the rich, you know. But I have a problem with the 1% in the sense that, you know, the whole military-industrial complex and those that got bailed out, those corporate welfare bastards, you know, not that I don't want the rich to pay more per se. I just want those guys, I want them to be neutered. I want their gravy train cut off. Yeah, we need a defense industry, but not near, you know, the size and specter that it has today. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, that's for sure. Well, I mean,
and plus,
the top money makers in our country right now, they're all mercantilists. They're all connected with the government, except for obviously like the Microsofts and the Apples, and you know, there are a few out there. But
if
they're connected into the military-industrial complex, they make their millions, their billions, you know, and there are people like that from government contracts that are guaranteed.
They're all on the government gravy train. They're at the tax trough, as are all the private contractors, especially in Iraq. And they're still there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, billions.
Where's the housing market doing the best in the country right now? Where is the highest rate of inflation in housing prices?
Isn't it Washington, D.C. area?
Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I wouldn't care if they blew the whole place up. You know? It's just such a mess. It's such a destructive mess. But I'm with Ron Paul about Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. I want to see them reformed, but I don't want to throw people out on the streets. I don't want to do all that. There's plenty of money to be taken from the overseas spending for the ridiculous foreign policy and all that, and then shore things up, sell government property off. I'd like to give a lot of our seniors a lump sum and just cut them free, and then cut our young people free, or buy the seniors an annuity. You know, because it is a pyramid scheme, and it was FDR's vote buying scheme. It is a pyramid scheme.
Of course, it is.
Yeah.
Well,
talking to you, you sound like you're informed about stuff. But talking to you is also like, you know, talking to the choir. I've yet to really clash. I'm wanting to clash with somebody. I'm looking for a, you know, intellectual battle, and it hasn't happened yet. And I'm always practicing when I see Ron Paul or I'm watching the talking heads, I'm always practicing what I would say to them. Because I don't, you know, I speak truth to power, and I'm not beholden to any political party. I'm in the Republican Party only because that way I can vote for Ron Paul. You know, I was in the Libertarian Party. Say what?
No, the thing is, you know, speaking truth to power, the problem is when you talk to somebody who's like an avowed leftist or a, you know, a lover of socialism or the, you know, the state, the problem is that they always leave everything up to their interpretation. You can lay the facts before them, you can show them history, you can show them cause and effect, and they're going to say, oh, is that how you interpreted it? It's kind of like the difference between common law and what we have now, which is political law. You know, political law is left up to the interpretation of whoever the lawyer or judge is at the moment or the politician. Natural law is just pretty simple. There are two rules. I think I've told you this before when I was talking to you in the past.
Well, I would say
natural law says do everything you've agreed to do, which is contract law, and don't aggress against a person or their property. That's it. It's very simple.
You had just said that you can lay out the facts for them and they still say that's how you interpret it.
Exactly.
I would say to them, well, how do you interpret this? In other words, you want the same people to give you health care or Social Security, the same government who dropped atomic bombs on Japan, who gave us the Tuskegee experiment, the Vietnam War, and all these things. You want the same government to do that. To me, that's my way of putting them on the defensive a bit. Oh, so you're going to tame the state.
And their answer would be, yes, but we would do it differently.
Right.
It has to be reformed. It can't
then
be done the way they would do it. Give me the power, and I'll show how it should be done.
Okay, fine. So I'll build on what you just said. You said we would have to do it. How did you say we'd have to do it our way?
Yeah, well, you give me the power, and I'll show you how it should be done.
Okay, well, Obama's had the power, and what has he done? He's tripled the drone attacks. He signed the largest military budget ever. They're still renditioning. Guantanamo's still open. So, you know, their leader ain't done it differently, according to their own way. And like I always like to say, Obama is Bush 3 with a makeover on steroids.
Oh, you just got to give him a little more time. He needs a better chance. It's really tough doing his job. That's the hardest job in the world, you know.
I'd like to go to Occupy Wall Street and have my podium and offer to lead the masses. Like, here it is, folks. I'll be your leader. This is what it is. I'm in agreement with you on some of these things, but we don't owe you a living. We don't da 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 da. But as far as crony capitalism and bailing out the banks and the wars, I'm right there with you. But you got to know about the Federal Reserve System. You got to know about what these globalists are up to, and of course the military, industrial, congressional, banking complex. I've recently added banking to that because they're tied in too. But you know, I don't pick on Big Oil on Wall Street
when he was on the street with his microphone talking to the people there.
Peter Schiff.
Yeah.
Yeah. He said. I'm one of the 1%. Let's talk.
Yeah.
But he was pretty good. But he could have been better. There's a few other things he could have said that were better. Added on to that, I'm always looking for those key phrases to throw in there. But my battle would want to be I haven't clashed. I want to clash with somebody that's substantial, somebody with name recognition. You know, I'm just a. You know, I'm not anybody important. I would love to be on Bill Maher's show. or someone like that, to be a guest or be able to talk to somebody like this. You know, if you get on talk radio, Rush Limbaugh or Hannity, you're only going to get your little bit until they cut you off or, you know, try to marginalize you.
Until they try to smack you down with a lot of loud talk and insults.
Yeah, talking over you, the same crap. You know, and O'Reilly's the worst at that. You know, he's terrible at that. But I'd go on any of those shows if I had the opportunity, and I'd be ready to do battle, and because that hasn't really happened yet, and because I know economics too, so that would be my part of my gist of things. Plus, I gave Ron Paul in September when he was I saw him at a briefly at a conservative conference where he was the debate was the night before, and I was a delegate, and I gave him a little piece of paper that I typed some things on, and one was you should bring your Cato copy of the Constitution with you, that small pocketbook copy. It's the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights.
I have one of those right here.
Yeah, the U.S. Constitution. Well, I would have it, and I would pull it out at debates, and I would say, please show me where it says that the federal government is supposed to operate over 900 military bases in over 130 foreign countries. Please show me where that's enumerated in the Constitution, folks, because I get it, Mr. What's the name of the person that holds the debate? I can't think of the name right now. Mr. Who handles the debates? I forget the Mr. Moderator. Please show me where it says that. I get it about defense, and I'm pro gun ownership.
Wasn't it Anderson Cooper last time or something?
I don't think so. I don't think the last one was. I don't think he was on the last one. But I'm also pro-gun, and that throws some conservatives off too, because I'm pro-gun ownership, but against the war. So that they accept Bush's thing because, Bush's awful speech about Saddam Hussein and it bitched Connie Rice. You know, the mushroom clouds. You can see the mushroom clouds. I mean, just the absolute lies they told, you know. And at least Ron Paul said recently that the submarines are a good defense, you know, our submarines. Instead of stationing troops everywhere, if you need a submarine, you know, we got all that. So, but they just antagonize other countries. I also mentioned briefly, you didn't hear me, is that in spite of all this, I don't really criticize big oil all that much. I don't have a lot of venom for them per se. I just want a free market in energy. And as I understand it, big oil reps were not banging the drums for war against Iraq, as I understand it. They don't need their employees kidnapped or killed or their equipment in their facilities blown up. So, and they're known as the Seven Sisters, or they were. I don't know if you ever heard that term referred to the oil companies, the Seven Sisters.
No, I've never heard that one. No.
Never heard that one? Yeah, the Seven Sisters would have been like Exxon, Mobil, you know, Standard Oil,
Shell, BP,
Shell, Royal Dutch Shell. Well, BP was, was it ARCO before? Atlanta Rich?
I don't know. British Atlantic Petroleum's Richfield. Been around for at least 75 years, probably 100 actually.
So I heard this term about 30 years ago, I think. I don't know if they still call themselves that. I don't know how many sisters are left, but I don't know. I don't feel compelled to rail against big oil that much. I don't want to give them any protectionism or any privilege. And most Americans don't know. I saw the figure was lower than I thought. Someone said 10%. But I'll even use that person's figure. I thought it was somebody reputable I saw. I can't remember who recently. But the U.S. only gets like 10% of its oil from the Middle East. So why do we need Israel, our big ally over there, just stirring up more trouble, you know? Ever since the U.S. propped them up since 48 and gave them aid and all this free American-made murder weapons, you know, it's been a terrible mess. And talk about a ghetto. They talk about the Jews living in ghettos in Europe or during World War II. They've created their own ghetto, the biggest one in the world there in Israel. And they built their own fences up, walls, with American dollars. And then what they've done to the Palestinians, penning them up there in Gaza. You know, those poor people, they're desperate.
Yeah, they are. They are. I mean, this is like a huge concentration camp over there.
And look at Egypt now. I knew this would happen because the military hasn't given elections yet. They've, you know, They're stalling. It's just a military rule, I guess, in a nomenclature or a small ruling clique at the top. And, of course, the CIA's got their tentacles and everything, too, and Mossad.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Well, yeah. Hey, I've got a clip here. I've been reading through Ralph Rako's book again, Great Wars and Great Leaders, and it leads into exactly what you're talking about, what's happening in the Middle East.
He's a great historian.
Are you hip to this book?
No, but I'm a big fan of his, and boy, he really goes off on Churchill, that bastard.
Yeah, well, speaking of, you know, your Zionist bent there and what's going on with all this stuff,
there's a thing here
about Churchill and the Zionists.
Well, he was funded by them.
What's that?
He was funded by rich Zionists in the 30s, and, you know, he was pretty broke, and they moneyed him along. They were
They helped to cover his debts of something like 25,000 pounds at the time.
Yeah, there's a name for them, and the head of Dutch Shell or
the
Jewish
group
head
called
of
the Focus.
The Focus, that's right. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Here's just one paragraph out of his book. He says Churchill had been a strong Zionist practically from the start, holding that Zionism would deflect European Jews from social revolution to partnership with European imperialism in the Arab world. Now, in 1936, he forged links with the informal London pressure group known as the Focus, whose purpose was to open the eyes of the British public to the one great menace, Nazi Germany. And here's a quote. The great bulk of its finance came from Jewish businessmen such as Sir Robert Mond, a director of several chemical firms, and Sir Robert Wally Cohn, the managing director of Shell, the latter contributing £50,000. The Focus was to be useful in expanding Churchill's network of contacts and in pushing for his entry into the cabinet. Anyway, that's just a little bit of that.
Well, I've read that, most of that also in the Barnes Review. They go off on it big time.
Exactly.
And also, apparently the early Nazis had Jewish backing too, or there's some Jewish Zionists involved in that, because they wanted to scare the people off and get them to move out of Europe. They wanted to stick them in Israel, the Rothschild-backed Zionists. So it's a convoluted story, and it's not how it looks on the surface. Yeah, there were Jews were persecuted, but powerful Zionists didn't mind because it served their aims of global. You know, they want world government. They're part of that whole global thing. So I used to hear that years ago, the Jewish conspiracy and that, and I never paid much attention to it. But lately, sure. I'm starting to see how things are coming together. And regular rank-and-file Jews they haven't probably looked into this stuff. As smart as they are, they haven't looked into this much. They've just believed their leaders, well, you've been oppressed for centuries and da-da-da-da-da and all this hatred and anti-Semitism. But I like to find out why these things are like that. And I don't accept you're anti-Semitic or racist for inquiry, because that's just their way of shutting down all inquiry. It's fine to go off on the Muslims. I mean, the things that are said about Muslims, if that was said about Jews, that would be a big deal, but Muslims get a pass.
Yeah, and a lot of people get a pass on talking about the Goyim.
Oh, yeah, which, by the way, as I understand it, is actually, I don't care, but it's actually a disrespectful word. It means like pig or
completely.
I think dog or goat, you know.
Yeah, unclean.
Yeah, and so a lot of this Jewish supremacism and this prejudice and this whole chosen people crap comes from the Talmud, that awful book, which was a legacy of the Pharisees whom Jesus debated with and argued with and I think condemned a bit. So they hated him. And I guess the Talmud stems from about around his time, not like the Old Testament, not old as that. And again, as I understand it, in medieval Europe, there's some major book burnings of the Talmud, but not the Old Testament. So the Jews of today, who are mostly atheistic, agnostic, or secular, should be looking at the Torah, the Old Testament, not the Talmud. And all these powerful Jews and Zionists, they're mostly Talmudic Jews. So, and Jews are intellectual. Jews are intellectual. They're well-educated. They're intellectual. Well, so I'm going down their same path here, but intellectual and learned about these topics. Yeah. So, you know, they can't knock me off my horse very well, especially when I will bring in Jewish anti-Zionist writers and authors and intellectuals. What are you going to do to them? Are you going to call them anti-Semitic? It's like a black guy call another black guy a racist because, you know, it just, to me, it doesn't hold any water.
Right, right. Well, it's like any, most of the people I meet here where I live who are, you know, if the conversation comes up about religion or anything, they say, well, I'm Jewish but non-practicing. I don't follow any of that. That's just the way I was born. And I'm like, wow, almost none of them claim to be religious.
Right, but they still claim their Jewish heritage. So they practice their religion as a tradition. They claim membership to the tribe.
Just by birth, but they don't practice at all.
Or if they do, again, it's not that they're believers per se. They practice it as a tradition. It's like, you know, it's like us having Thanksgiving. It's a lengthy tradition. We keep doing it over and over.
Right.
You don't have to be religious to enjoy Thanksgiving, but yeah, most of them are secular. I contend that most of the world's Jews are either secular and or agnostic and or atheistic. And most Americans, all this Christian Zionist crowd, oh, we got to protect Israel, we got to help Israel, they're tying all that into the Bible. The Jews of Israel are nothing like the Jews of the Bible, and most of them aren't even Semites.
I don't think they're related in any way. It's just, how many of them can trace their family ancestry back 2,000 years?
I mean, right, seriously. Right. Well, and plus there was and I think I mentioned this before, I don't know if you're hip to this, there was a major conversion about 750 AD when the Khazars became, by decree, the king decreed that his kingdom would become Jewish. They would practice the Jewish religion because he had pressure on one side from Muslims and on the other side from Christians, I guess. So he chose that.
Yeah, he didn't want to be in the battle.
Right. And the legacy, the Ashkenazi Jews are the ones we have today, mostly the white Jews who live in Israel and have come from Europe and Russia, you know. So I want to read Solzhenitsyn's. I got to get Solzhenitsyn's book about, Russia and the Jews, 200 years of, you know, living together, Russia and the Jews, and, you know, very strong power structure over there that Stalin used. You know the story about he used Jewish, most of the commissars, architects, intellectuals who orchestrated the murder of 20 million Christians during Stalin's purges were atheist Russian Jews. Although he later turned on a lot of those Jews and they were liquidated. And then after the war, there was the doctor's plot, 1946, where he didn't trust a lot of the Jewish doctors and this and that. So, you know, I've learned so much about this, and I didn't learn any of this in history in school. You know, I always learned Hitler was a bad guy. He invaded Poland and Russia, and when he invaded Poland, he dressed up some, he dressed up some dead Poles in German uniforms or something. He staged it, basically. But it was because between the end of World War I and the beginning of World War II, the Poles murdered over 60,000 German citizens in former German territories.
Right, right. Well, that was the Treaty of Versailles that destroyed the whole thing. I mean,
Exactly.
It was a travesty, the Treaty of Versailles.
Well, it was and as I understand it, the Kaiser's Jewish lawyers sold out Germany, too, and that's why Hitler said that the Jews stabbed Germany in the back. Well, it's because the bankers, you know, kind of switched sides during the war, because the Zionists wanted Palestine, which was under Turkish control, and Turkey and Germany were in league together. So if Germany won, well, Turkey's not going to give up Palestine to the Zionists, so if you know the story, the Zionist bankers, they went to the British and said, look, we can help you win this war. Because in 1916, Germany was pretty much the victor. And that wasn't really a bad thing.
They wanted to go to terms. They wanted to have peace. They're like, okay, let's discuss terms like we always do.
As they did in World War II, and and Churchill always turned them down. To me, Churchill was terrible. You know, my whole views of Hitler have really changed. I'm not saying he's a nice guy, but I think if Hitler would have been left...
All.
I think if he would have been left alone, all this shit wouldn't have happened, because he only invaded Russia because they were going to invade Europe, and he wanted to take back their former German territories in Czechoslovakia and Poland that were taken from Germany by the Versailles Treaty, and then he would have been left alone. He would have been heavily armed, but that was mainly to defend himself from Russia and or any European country who picked a fight with Germany. But you know, a lot of Europeans didn't care for Hitler, but they saw Germany as the only, barrier to stand between them and communism, which was much worse, and it murdered a lot more people.
Sure. Well, there were loads of French who fought on the side of the Germans fighting the Russians. There were loads of Russians who came over to fight with the Germans against the Russians.
Yeah,
the communists, sorry.
True.
I should say
something I didn't realize, or didn't think of until about a year ago, is that, you know, when Germany invaded France, when they went through Belgium to take France, because France and Britain declared war on Germany for invading Poland,
right,
to take back what was theirs, actually.
If England declared war on Germany for invading Poland, why didn't they declare war on Russia for invading Poland a day later?
It's always been my big question. The Baltic countries, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, invaded all those. And, of course, Finland. No, they didn't. You know, that's the hypocritical BS of the whole thing. But even when Hitler invaded France in 1940 until the end of the war, as I understand it, the Germans didn't tear the hell out of France. They didn't kill a lot of people there. He didn't blow up Paris. I think he went there for a day or two, looked around, and got to surrender in that train card that where the World War I had theirs. But as I understand it, he didn't tear up those countries. He didn't tear up Norway or Denmark. You know, where there was war, but he didn't tear up other countries per se.
Yeah, and he wasn't bombing civilian cities
the Allies did terribly. They bombed the hell out of civilians. I mean, if the truth were known, the Allies were probably worse. And then the nerve, the hypocrisy of the Nuremberg trials, to have Russians presiding over those when they already murdered over 20 million Christians before the end of World War II. And then of course this sad story of German history. Of course, there were a few million Germans who died after the war. From brutal deportations,
starvation,
imprisonment,
I think it was the Russians marched off 3 million Germans after World War II as slaves back to Russia to be working.
Well, and also because Ambassador Churchill and Truman, Operation Keelhaul, I think it was, they turned over all these former prisoners that Stalin wanted back, and most of them never came back, or they were all killed, including the White Russians.
Yeah.
You know, who fought against Stalin, and Germans and other British or American prisoners, some of that too. So I mean, it was an awful deal they cut. It's just awful. Churchill was terrible. And if you've listened to that, and I'm a fan of David Irving's, I don't care, I'm not politically correct. What he talked about Churchill, never being around when the raids came. And then because they were reading the German code, so they knew. And then when the one time he did stay in London, he knew they were going to hit Coventry, and then he's shaking his fist at the sky. Come on, come on! You know what a lying bastard he was. You know he who sought to preserve the British Empire destroyed it, and he pushed for World War One big time from behind the scenes, and certainly World War II. So that was pretty much the destruction of the British Empire. It was a total waste and a total loss of lives, and it was not necessary either one of those wars.
Neither.
You know, and the American war machine, they're so full of themselves, you know. Well, they beat up countries like Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, there's no, you know, they don't beat up and pick on Russia or China, you know. Not that it has to be a competition or go to war, but you see who they bomb, Libya, these other countries. You know, they don't engage nuclear countries. You know, they should make Israel give up their nukes. That's the problem. They're very dangerous. They got the Samson option, where they have missiles pointed at Rome, London, Paris. I mean, they could hit. Look where they're situated. They can hit everywhere. And now Iran is the boogeyman. Iran is, you know, I'm not worried about Iran at all. They haven't attacked anybody for centuries. There's over 25,000 Jews living there, and they're not threatened. And even if Iran had a bomb, they're not going to attack Israel because they know that they'd be slammed immediately thereafter. But when you have a nuke, you don't get messed with by other countries.
Right, but you know that the Iran thing isn't about nuclear weapons at all. It's about oil and about China's contracts with Iran to get oil from them. They're trying to cut off the resources to China because they're so afraid of them as becoming the most powerful industrial country in the world.
That's how Britain viewed Germany prior to World War I and World War II. They resented German sea power and technology and a growing, you know, colonies and all that. When Germany wasn't threatening Britain or Europe or the other countries, they were doing their own thing, as I understand it.
And also, they were doing it well.
They kicked out something like 80,000 Chinese from Libya. That's another power grab. There's a lot of Chinese in Libya.
Yeah, and oil.
Yeah.
A lot of natural resources. The Chinese are going around the world. It's like Jim Sinclair says, you know, the U.S. always says, well, they have all those dollars. They can't dump them. They have a dollar problem. They've got $3 trillion in reserves and probably close to $1.5 trillion or close to $2 trillion in dollar reserves. According to Jim Sinclair, he's been doing business with the Chinese because he has land and natural resources in his company in Tanzania. And he says the Chinese don't have a dollar problem. They've been going around the world snapping up natural resources for the last 5-6 years. And the problem is not a dollar problem for them. It's a natural resource problem.
They're going to have their own problems with the population and pollution, and that's some of their problems now. But they'll probably have a bubble, a real estate bubble, or some inflationary problems too. But they're acting.
They do. They have a huge real estate problem. Yeah.
They're acting capitalistically when they go around the world and buy stuff. They're not bringing their army and threatening people and bombing people. They're making deals. And for that, Uncle Sam and NATO's running them out?
Yeah. They're spreading the wealth is what they're doing.
It's a global power scam. Maybe it's because the globalists don't control China. Maybe they're outside the Rothschild wing.
Completely. Asia is its own place. I mean, Vietnam is small. Korea is small. You know, these were small countries. China's enormous.
Yeah. Well, and China's bickering with their neighbors over the South China Sea rights, too. So that's a needless thing they're going through with Philippines and I think Burma or India or Thailand. There's some issues with property rights, and there's a lot of oil and natural gas in those areas, and China's sounds like they're being a bit of a bully, what I've read lately from Eric Margolis. But I don't bash China. You know, it's their century, like I've said. 19th century was Britain's, 20th century was America's, 21st century is China's.
That's what Jim Rogers says, too.
And or Asia's. And so what? We should embrace it. You know, we should cut our taxes drastically and our regulations and become more of an economic powerhouse. But it's sad to see things collapse. It doesn't have to be this way. Obama's making it worse. Now he's going to put more U.S. troops in Australia. I mean, when I was in Australia back in 88, my girlfriend took a picture of me standing in front of the corrugated fence that had the long corrugated fence that had in red letters, U.S. out of Australia. And I thought, yeah, I'm standing in front of it with my hands out. I still have the picture. I'm standing with my hands out in front of me like, what can I do about it? You know, yeah, it said U.S. out of Australia. So sticking more bases there. What are they going to try to do, surround China? Are they going to bully China? China's got a billion people.
A billion and
nuclear
and a half.
Weapons. And nuclear weapons. And they might not have, they might not have all Uncle Sam's high-tech stuff, but they have enough to stand their ground. I mean, I read about Korea when the U.S. federal government was hassling Korea. Korea, yeah, nowadays I'm sure they could beat them, but the point is that they'd be running into a hedgehog. I mean, Korea's got a very tough military, got a million guys. If they want to, if they want to try to take Korea, North Korea, they'd have a big problem.
North Korea.
If
they went to take North Korea, most of the North Koreans would play, please take us out of here. Get us out of here.
Yeah. It's just awful. It's just awful that idiot dictator's done. But I don't care about Kim Il-sung II or whatever. This is not a threat to me. You know, like I like to say, the U.S. could station some ships in these areas, and if any of these countries try to launch weapons against the U.S. or other friendly countries, they can just knock them down.
Easily.
With their technology, you know. So that saves all this huge military expenditure. You know, these factories in the U.S., they need to retool. You know, there's some defense industries, of course, but it's just ridiculous. These government contracts for defense. You know, we need consumer products. We need all these other kind of jobs. And the military industrial complex is just sucking billions away from other required capitalist investment in the private sector. I bicker with people on this. You know, I debate people on this and on Facebook. And when I argue constitutionally, they it's funny, these conservatives, well, they're actually neocons. They're kind of like, well, they're on the defensive, you know. They've never really given me a very good rebuttal. Because the mighty PK uses irrefutable logic. It's like, my logic is so good with these people, I think, sometimes, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, that it's like, if you want to disagree with me that 2 and 2 equals 4, that's fine. But you're never going to be right.
Yeah.
You know, I try to frame
it. Like they said, you know, the intellectual battle was won years ago for the free market and for the Austrian school, the style of economics. Now it's just, you know, getting the ideas out to the masses.
Well, right, but since the government, the state controls the schools, and now this useless federal government has its stupid Department of Education, which Republicans have never gotten rid of, they've only strengthened it or made it bigger. You know, you have, that's why I don't like state control of education, because then you have indoctrination of statism. You know, left or right, even Republicans, you know, they say they're opposed to, you know, the Department of Energy, but they don't oppose public schools per se, as I understand it.
That's for sure. Well, it's like Uncle Eric would say, the guy Richard Mayberry, who writes the books, and he kind of has some revisionist history in there, and he explains politicians and their thinking. You know, it's not about what's right or wrong; it's what keeps them in power. And he says a politician is like a heroin addict. When they get that power going, it's like a heroin rush. It's like they've got the biggest high ever found, and they only want to find it again every time. And the more power they gain, and the more they give away of other people's stuff, you know, that's what they seek. They want that rush, that adrenaline rush, that rush of heroin going in.
Well, that's true. Plus, they're just...
How do you beat that?
They're just... Well, simple. Two words. Term limits.
Well,
strict term limits would crush all those bastards.
Yeah. I agree. Term limits.
Across the board. And that includes sheriffs and all the bureaucrats, you know. And then one thing, I don't think if somebody already serves X amount of times as a senator, I don't know that, you know, if they skip 5 or 10 years down the line and run again for it, they should be allowed to do it. I don't, you know, I'm not an anarchist. I'm a minarchist. And I don't want to throw too many rules out there. But I wouldn't mind if the same person can't be governor again after two terms.
Sure.
You know, and that still serves democracy, which I basically despise democracy, except for peaceful way we choose our leaders and the democracy of the marketplace, where, like as Mises say, what every penny or every dollar is a vote. But as far as majority rule, you know, I'm prone to the partial to the, you know, democracy is three wolves and one sheep voting on for what they want for breakfast.
Yeah, it's two wolves and a sheep deciding what they're going to have for dinner. Yeah,
they're always talking about democracy. Oh, well, I'd be talking about a republic, objective rule by law, which what we're supposed to have. But you know, we could get rid probably of 75% of our laws, and we'd probably surge. We'd be much better off, healthier, more prosperous, less apathy, less crime, no stupid drug war. Yeah. They don't talk about ending the drug war. And it's funny that the super committee failed, if you heard that. They failed to come up with price cutting. But that's a good thing, I think, that they failed. I'm glad they failed. I'm glad they said they failed. They shouldn't be doing that anyway.
It shows just what a bunch of clowns they are, is what it does.
Well, they should put this clown on there, PK. I'll tear him a new one, and I'll say, look.
PK, you should be the big clown.
That's right. Every state already has a Department of Agriculture, a Department of Transportation, Department of Education, environmental departments. Why are we paying for all the federal ones? Get rid of those and give every federal employee that gets fired, this is my remedy, his full pay and benefits for the next 2 years. That's still cheaper than keeping the damn bureaucracies open.
You're generous.
Well, I'm generous, but why not? You know, I mean, they didn't really make the problem. They're part of it. Their employment is a result of it, but their employment doesn't create any new wealth. Those aren't constitutional bureaucracies. You know, Social Security, I mean, people have grown, and they call it entitlements like they're entitled to it, but I don't have a harsh line on that. I would like to see it phased out and changed or privatized, but again, not to throw anybody on the street. I don't want civil war. I don't want revolution in that aspect. So,
not at all.
But I would like to educate the people, and we'll get it out of it so you can get private choices and a real true free market economy with no tax-funded bailouts, with no crony capitalism, with no corporate welfare, no subsidies, no political privilege for the politically connected. See, I'm consistent. I always mention these things. It has to clarify what needs to be done for the capitalist system. When these idiots, these occupiers, they want to get rid of capitalism, they don't qualify it. You know, they'd throw out the baby with the bathwater, if you will. They're going to destroy the engine of production and wealth.
Well, you know, according to the great Harry Reid, he says it's not taxes and and regulations that are ruining the economy. He says that the Republicans can't come up with one incident of that happening. So what do you say to a guy like that?
Well, the Republicans ain't going to save us. I'm a Ron Paul Republican. I don't trust Republicans for the most part because they just turn into big spenders once they get in power. Actually, they're better when they're out of office because usually then they fight taxes and spending. But once they get in office, they're handing out the trough, tax trough to their friends, basically. They're just, you know, they're injected with power. As the great Lou Rockwell says, they are the conservative welfare state.
Completely.
I like
hey, PK, I think I'm going to have to run. My phone's about to die.
Okay. Well, listen, thanks for coming on. I got to wind this down anyway. We'll see what happens next year when the great Obama takes us into 2012. Thanks for coming on, Andy. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, PK. Talk to you then.
All right. And so, ladies and gentlemen, that was our little discussion about geopolitics, the world, and the economy. I see next year as being worse than this year. More foreclosures, more unemployment. Sorry to be apathetic about it, but they're going down the wrong path. And the stimulus stuff, it's temporary. It's not creating wealth that perpetuates itself. You know, it's just like, let's throw all this money at these things and give people jobs. Well, that money's going to run out, and those jobs can run out if they're not real jobs that pertain to production and furthering economic development and in real employment. So there you have it. But as I wind down here on this evening of November 21st, 2011, boy, this year's gone quickly. I want to invite everybody back, same time, same place, here with your host, PK, Monday evenings on Third Stream View at bbsradio.com, station 2, 8:55 p.m. Pacific, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next time, this is your humble host, PK, signing off.